You're listening to a punk movie review right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
Man, he's got six bullets.
For real?
We all go once?
Christ, hold off a sec.
For what?
We haven't done anything!
Doesn't matter.
Okay. They're called cartridges. The bullet is a part that enters your brain if you keep talking shit. And this gun only has five cartridges, not six. Because they're big as fuck and only five fit the cylinder. So please, shut the fuck up and don't test me.
You're making it worse.
We sit and we wait.
And we die?
Not if you sit and you wait.
Everybody, we're doing the movie Green Room, which is a 2015 horror thriller. So the synopsis is, after playing at a failed venue, punk band The Ain't Rights get a gig at an underground club. But unbeknownst to them, the club is full of neo-Nazis, and after accidentally witnessing a murder committed by the neo-Nazis, they find that they will not let them go very easily. They now must engage in a battle of wits against the neo-Nazis, who want to erase all the evidence of their crime, including the witnesses. You're listening to Punk Movie Review. We are now on episode 9 of Punk Movie Review, so we have done significantly fewer. It's significantly fewer. 9, which is German for no, and there was a lot of German in the movie that we reviewed this time. Yeah, I'm Neckbone.
Hi. I'm Jer Bear, and I have a master's degree in fuckery, which is different than buggery.
That's true. It's a very different type of degree.
Yeah.
If you want to study either of those, you can go ahead and attend the university that we will be founding by the end of the night.
Nice.
Yeah. We got to think of a name. We'll think of one.
Okay.
Yeah. So we reviewed a movie called Green Room, which is a 2015 horror thriller. It is October, so we had to do a horror-type movie. It is directed by Jeremy Saulnier, or Saulnier. I'm going to guess Saulnier. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and I'm sorry, he's not famous enough for me to know how his name is said.
He made a pretty decent movie, though.
He made a damn good movie.
Yeah.
He is a Virginia native, which is why the band The Ain't Rights were from Virginia, because that's where he's from.
Nice.
The film was released
from home.
They were a long. I mean, it makes a lot of bands from the DC area, you know, like that tracks. So the film was released by A24, because of course it was. It feels right for the movie. It was screened at the Cannes Film Festival and the Toronto International Film Festival before being widely released in May of 2016, which was just 1 month before the death of the star of the film, Anton Yelchin. R.I.P.
R.I.P. He is my second favorite Chekhov.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's only two, but...
Well, you know.
It's okay.
Well, he's right up there.
He's still in the top two.
No, he's great. Phenomenal job in the movie, and tragic death.
Tragic.
Just fucking terrible.
Did you read about his death?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awful.
So he was pinned between like a brick post and his car, because his car rolled back on him when he was like checking his mail in his driveway or something.
Yeah.
And he just didn't show up for a dress rehearsal. And so they sent somebody to look for him, and he was found dead. He'd suffocated while being pinned between his car and a brick post. So
it's fucking terrible.
Fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the news of his death, being really, really shocked by it. Really, I like him as an actor, despite, you know, Star Trek, J.J. Abrams, Star Trek notwithstanding. Mm-hmm. Not his fault those movies sucked. It was all on J.J. Abrams.
Oh, for sure.
Or the suckiness of the Abrams Trek. He did an admirable job as Pavel Chekhov, but yeah. Anyway... He was also great in this movie, the one we reviewed, which stars him, Anton Yelchin, Aaliyah Shawkat, who everybody knows as maybe Fionke from Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will probably be referring to her as maybe Fionke for almost the entire podcast because I always forget that she has a real name. And I'm sure she listens, and I apologize. She probably listens. But you will always be maybe Fionke to me. Sorry. Not a bad role to be associated with, though. Great show.
Yep.
Indeed. It also has Imogen Poots, Joe Cole, Callum Turner, and, of course, the great Sir Patrick Stewart, who I will also intermittently be calling Captain Picard or Professor X, depending on where my brain is at that point. So, yeah. So that's Patrick Stewart, who was definitely the biggest actor in the film, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at the time, I mean, obviously, Patrick Stewart is huge.
Yeah.
But at the time, Anton Yelchin was like,
I mean,
definitely up and coming and getting a lot of like,
he was an up and coming actor. Yeah.
And publicity. But yeah, he's right. No Sir Patrick Stewart.
He'd been in Star Trek blockbuster Star Trek movies. But then again, Patrick Stewart has also been in blockbuster Star Trek movies.
Right. Yeah.
And also X-Men
television shows and
Dune TV shows.
Classically trained Shakespearean actor.
Stage actor. And I, full disclosure too, I forgot Anton Yelchin was in this movie.
Oh, really?
I thought that it was Jack Quaid, and I feel real bad.
Oh, yeah. I like Jack Quaid, though.
I like Jack Quaid too, and he would have also been okay for the role.
Yeah.
When it came on, I was like, wait, that's not Jack Quaid. Fuck. Like,
yeah.
So.
I don't think he was doing shit in 2015. I think he started acting a little bit later.
Yeah. But Jack Quaid, Anton Yelchin, Patrick Stewart, all connected to Star Trek.
Indeed.
Jack Quaid is the voice of Ensign Boimler in Star Trek Lower Decks.
Mm.
And then of course Anton Yelchin was in the Abrams Trek and Sir Patrick Stewart in, you know, TNG and its spinoffs. So definitely lots of Star Trek people in this, which made me happy. It did not make me happy to see Captain Picard playing a Nazi. That did not make me happy. This film had a budget of $5 million, which some B movie, studio, whose name I can't remember, is defunct now, actually raised the money. And I took a look through their catalog, and this is probably the only non-absolute trash movie they ever made.
Oh, really?
So this must have been like the director, I'm sure, had a vision, and they were just like, you can just have the money and just make it happen. And apparently there was some issues on set with him, like being kind of a, you know, a very junior director. They had Patrick Stewart for a day, and they were rushing to get the outdoor scenes filmed, you know, the ones at the end, they're rushing against daylight to get those scenes filmed. And they had Patrick Stewart just kind of like hanging out where they kept like something kept getting screwed up. I don't remember what happened, but like, yeah, the director had to like felt really bad and went over and apologized to him and said, I'm sorry, I'm really new at this. And I don't know. And this doesn't seem very professional. I know, but the product at the end was good. So,
oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell by the movie. It seems very well made.
And it was moved constantly. Like, I didn't feel like any of the scenes were dragging. But the movie only made $3.8 million back, so it is technically a flop.
How's it done in the aftermarket? I guess DVD sales don't really exist anymore. But
right, yeah. It's I'm sure it's probably broken even by now, but
yeah,
it's still considered a flop. It got rave reviews from Richard Roper of the Chicago Sun-Times, famous for being part of Ebert and Roper after Siskel died. He took over Siskel's spot. And it scored 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. So fans like it, critics like it, but just didn't like it enough to go see it on the big screen, I guess. I don't remember this movie coming out on the big screen. I got to be honest.
Yeah. I feel like 2015 was a weird time for movies. I mean, it was
Yeah.
pre-COVID, so everything was, I mean, it was still a big push to be in theaters.
Yeah,
But
for
yeah,
sure.
I don't, I mean, 2015 is about the time people really started cord cutting and going to just streaming services.
Oh, yeah.
So by that time, I don't remember seeing many ads for it.
No.
I mean, I remember seeing some internet ads
Yeah.
and things like that. And I was like, oh, that looks fucking good. Patrick Stewart is a Nazi. Wow. Punk rockers.
Right.
Wow. You know, but yeah, I don't, it
Yeah,
took a
don't.
while for me to see it. I don't think I watched it until 2020 for the first time.
And it would have been, so it came out in theaters of summer of 2016. That was May 2016. That's the exact month I finished grad school. So I don't know why I didn't go see it, but for whatever reason, I don't know. It just wasn't on my radar, I guess. Yeah, I honestly don't recognize any other movie he's directed. Murder Party, Blue Rain, Green Room was his third movie, and then Hold the Dark, Rebel Ridge, and he has a movie coming out soon. It doesn't say the year, just TBA, called October. He did directed an episode of True Detective and something called The Killer Speaks. Really weird. I'm not familiar with any of his work, but this movie was good, so maybe I will check out some of his other stuff. But anyway, let's get into the meat of the movie, I guess. So this movie was about Nazis.
So history for me, when I first saw the movie, I think maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention because I didn't remember how they got the gig at the skinhead club at the Nazi club. And so I was kind of like, you know, having difficulty with suspension of disbelief ba just because, like, why the fuck are they playing this Nazi club? As soon as they got there, I would have fucking left. They didn't have any money. They got fucked over the night before by that fucking dipshit with the Mohawk. And then he set him up with a gig at a fucking neo-Nazi bar.
And
In rural Oregon.
Oregon. Yeah. So, and I don't know if you noticed this. He said,
You know, his cousin or something.
It was his cousin, or and he said, because they asked, they're like, is he like a Nazi? Are these guys
Yeah, they were
Nazis? And they said,
like boots and braces, like what are we talking about here?
And he said, well, they're sort of right wing, but they're not Nazis. And then very clearly were Nazis.
I mean, there were fucking Celtic crosses on the wall. There were
Yep.
SSs on the
Swastikas.
wall. There were swastikas everywhere. It was gnarly.
Confederate flags.
I mean, rural Oregon.
And that's the thing, is like people for whatever reason don't think, like, they think of the Pacific Northwest and they think of lattes, Nirvana, fucking Pearl
Crunchy
Jam,
liberals and
crunchy
hippies and
liberals, shit
shit.
like that. When I lived in the Pacific Northwest, I used to live in Washington. It was, I mean, that's like the dream spot for white nationalists. There's a huge white nationalist movement in Washington, Oregon, Idaho. And they, no kidding, no shit, want to form their own whites only country up there. And there's a huge, the movement that he was, they didn't cover specifically what movement Patrick Stewart was leading, but he even said, at one point in the club, he said, this isn't a party, this is a movement.
Those of you attending the racial advocacy workshop on Wednesday, assume it's on unless you're here otherwise. And remember, this is a movement, not a party. All right. Stay safe. Godspeed.
Yeah,
Like, that's basically like that shit's real, man. Like, I used to see Confederate flags and shit all the time up there, and that
It's
you
fucking
turn around and go
wild.
the other way.
I got Ruby Ridge vibes from them.
So basically the plot of the movie, for anyone who doesn't know, anyone who hasn't seen this movie, like I hadn't before today. So a punk band called the Ain't Rights from the DC metro area are...
it's at Arlington, right?
Yeah, they said Arlington, Virginia. They were in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know if they're supposed to be in Astoria, but that scene with the guy with the mohawk that was filmed in Astoria, Oregon. With the same town of Goonies. Goonies was also filmed in Astoria, Oregon.
Yeah, yeah.
So he shows the band shows up. He's supposed to have a gig for them. He got in bad with the venue owner who won't let him book shows there anymore, but they already drove all the way out there. So he books them a gig at a Mexican restaurant. They make like, you know,
$6 or something.
$6 each.
Yeah.
So yeah, like fucking $24, I guess. Yeah.
And it showed them earlier stealing gas. So they're clearly they're clearly like in some financial straits and just kind of want to get home, and they can't do it.
Right.
And it didn't, did it indicate what time frame it was in? I mean, there were cell phones that didn't look like they were smartphones. I don't know. But I mean, least the one that one Nazi had, it was a flip phone.
I mean, you got to remember this was, came out film festivals in 2015, probably filmed in 2014.
Yeah.
So people still had flip phones in 2014.
Yeah.
11 years ago, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like it, but.
No.
Yeah. So I think it was supposed to be contemporary for the time that it was filmed. But yeah, so the dude who booked him the gig that fell through, basically tells him like, hey, if you're going to go down through Oregon, there's a venue down there that you'll make $350. You go play, it's a matinee show, go play. And, you know, tells him like, you know, they're kind of right wing down there. So just, you know, maybe don't talk politics.
It said play old stuff. Or whatever that means. I mean,
I'm guessing that their newer stuff, it's implied their newer stuff is probably more political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm guessing. So they go down there and they drive up, and it's immediately obvious that they're just fucking Nazis. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
It was just reeked of Nazi. I honestly, like, I realized that they were broke and shit and they're supposed to make $350. I would have just turned around right then and there. I'd have been like, no, turn the fucking van around. We're not playing here. We're just not fucking doing it. Especially with, you know, maybe Funke there, who is not white.
Yeah.
So, I'd be like, yeah, we're not fucking playing here, dude. Just turn around. Come on.
Well, so here's one of the things that even in the mid-teens, I don't think that lace code is quite as much of an indicator of affiliation as it was in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have heard that from skins who say, you know, lace code doesn't mean shit anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, maybe there's some plausible deniability there. I don't know. Certainly once they went inside, it would have been pretty fucking obvious.
Really obvious. And so they take him to the green room, which is the room backstage where like bands or performers hang out in every fucking venue across the world. They go out and play. Aaliyah Shawkat's character plugs her phone in. And it's like, I'll just come back and get it after the show. So they go play. They open with Nazi Punk's Fuck Off, which was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
We're not.
This was your fucking idea.
You back out now, I tell him you're Jewish.
Go.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen, we are the Ain't Rights, or the Aren't Rights, either one.
Don't think about it! Fucking no religious code, found mistaken for yourself. The ain't hardcore, this is spiky hair, but Jack still lives inside your head. Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks, fuck up! Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks, fuck up! We come to fight, get out of here, you ain't no better than bouncers. We get drunk. Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks, fuck up! Nazi punks, Nazi punks, Nazi punks, fuck up!
They get some bottles thrown at them. They get some people that are pissed off. But overall, I mean, for being in like a literal Nazi bar, it was better received than I would have thought. You know, and then they go on and play the rest of their set. And, you know, you don't hear their music. It goes to some like swells and like almost orchestral type stuff with slow motion moshing.
Very cinematic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Well, because they don't really, I mean, they're not a real band, so they don't really have any.
Right.
Songs, yeah. Though Anton Yelchin and Elias Shawkat apparently actually knew how to play their instruments.
Oh, nice.
And the guy who played the drummer, whose name is escaping me right now, I think the drummer was Joe Cole. Joe Cole played the drummer. He apparently learned how to play drums just for this role.
Nice.
So when he found out he got this role, he taught himself very quickly how to play drums.
And just Nazi punks fuck off, though, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a good song to learn. You're going to learn one.
Well, I guess they played at the first venue at the Mexican restaurant where they got fucked over. They played a little bit.
They played too, one simple song. So basically, and then, you know, after the show, they're packing up all their stuff. And, you know, the guy who's kind of their handler is like, okay, we, you know, all your stuff's packed up. We're going to show you out this way. You can't go back into the green room because the headliner band is already in there and we don't want you to disturb them. Elias Shawkat and Anton Yelchin realize that she left her phone in there. So Anton Yelchin runs in to grab it for her and they see a skinhead girl who had been stabbed through the head. Yeah. And was dead. Very dead.
Fire code.
Yeah, sorry guys, we have to make room for the headliner.
Cow catcher, right?
Yes. Gotta clear up. Okay. Here we are. And it's all there. And you guys follow me? Okay.
Alright, you need a quick move. One more two here for the road. Come on. You got that?
I'm being careful.
Ah, shit, my phone.
What?
My phone. I'll catch
up. I got you.
Thanks.
Excuse me, y'all. Shit.
You call the cops.
Fuck that.
Hey, stop! Motherfucker!
I told you to follow.
Yes, I am. I don't know. There's been a bit of stabbing. Whoa! God damn it!
You didn't lock the door.
You didn't lock the door.
No, don't talk and don't touch them. Stay put. It's fine. Just give me a minute. Something terrible.
So they end up getting trapped in the green room and they're kind of at an impasse because they know if they come out, they're going to get killed. They kidnap the handler guy and hold him hostage in there. Sir Patrick Stewart is the venue's owner and the leader of this white nationalist movement out there. Maybe that's why they still use the lace code, because he's, I mean, he's old, so he's probably old school and probably, I mean, it seems like he runs that group,
that crew,
completely. Yeah. He even gives one of the guys his red laces in the middle of the movie, and it's like, you've earned these, and hands him red laces. So that might have just been a, like, Patrick Stewart's character is just old, so he's old school.
And, you know, I mean, my interjection there is just anecdotal, you know.
Yeah, of course.
There could be.
And that's, I mean, Oregon, too, and not Kansas. Maybe it was different places.
For sure.
I don't know. Yeah.
So clearly in the movie, lace code means something.
Red laces, at least traditionally, meant that you shed blood for the cause.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so basically the entire movie is a standoff between the Ain't Rights and the owners slash people running the Nazi club. And you know, the reason they don't storm in and just shoot them is because they're like, well, the cops are going to come, because they make a 911 call real quick before they get their phone away from them. So the cops are already tracking that something's happening out there. They come out and investigate. They make up some bullshit excuse, send the cops away.
Yeah, they have two younger Nazi skins stab each other because Anton Yelchin calls the cops and says there's been a stabbing. And then, you know, one of the Nazis takes the phone away from him, hangs it up, and calls it later, or calls them back, or waits for the cops to call back, and is like, yeah, there's a stabbing. And you know, he orchestrates a different stabbing where someone is not dead, and you know, has the, I think maybe that's how the kids are in their laces or something. I don't know.
Was that
the scene where they got their laces?
No, it was the guy who got to live, the Nazi who got to live at the end, the one who seemed like he wasn't super committed to the cause.
Yeah. Yeah. The one who was like, I don't want to go to jail.
Right. Yeah. He was just like, I'm just kind of here. Like,
yeah.
Which if you're just, well,
he was handling the situation before Patrick Stewart got there.
He was trying to get those kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
he was trying to like do it non-violently, and Patrick Stewart's character was just like, "No, look, they got to die." But we can't just shoot them because
we have to make it look like an accident or
right. that
they fucked up, and you know they were searching through the band's van and they found their gas siphoning equipment, and he was like, "Oh, this is really good," so they could set up a fake scene where
there's
the
van blows up. They place the bodies in there. The bodies burn, so they can't really tell how else they die. But you can't have slugs in them. If they have slugs in them, they'll be like, well, here's a slug. So they released the dogs on them in a couple of scenes.
Which was fucked.
That was fucked up. Two of the band members were killed by dogs. I can't remember if it was the singer or the drummer. And then maybe Funke gets killed by the second dog. I knew she wasn't going to live, but I really hoped. I'd hoped she was going to live.
Gnarly. So the blonde skin bird, she survives, and Anton Yelchin survives.
Yep. And the blonde skin bird obviously turns to be on their side because they're going to fucking kill her, too.
She said the whole time that she wasn't a fucking Nazi, so...
Yeah. Which was weird. Right, because she definitely had that haircut. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's lots of skinheads who aren't Nazis, so
that's true. But her friend was obviously deep into it because the reason that they killed her was because she was about to leave with that guy who ends up turning to their side too, who is played by, I can't remember the actor's name, but he plays the lead singer of Scott Pilgrim's band and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, cool. He did a really good job.
He did.
Yeah, he was great.
Mm-hmm. So definitely another, we should probably do Scott Pilgrim at some point too. That's a great movie.
Sure. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah. Also the animated series that came out on Netflix is shockingly good too.
Oh, cool.
And it's not just a rehashing of the movie. It's a completely different story. So the first guy gets killed by... a dog basically just eats through his throat.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say that was the drummer, but I don't know for sure.
I think that was the drummer. Then the lead singer runs out, crawls through a window, and then gets stomped by some red laces.
Yeah.
And he dies that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Aliyah Shawkat gets eaten by a dog later. And that was, it's so... so the paintball story Anton Yelchin tells a story about how he was playing paintball with some friends and they're playing against some former Marines, and the Marines just kept like wiping the floor with them, like they were not taking out a single one of them, and they were just all getting slaughtered. And so his friend decided by the last round, he was like, fuck it, I'm just not even going to try anymore. I'm just going to run out there and start shooting. And he runs out and is not trying to be careful, not trying to be sneaky. He just sees somebody shoots him. And they end up winning that round. And so he decides to implement that strategy. They put on like Sharpie style face paint.
Yeah. The camo. I couldn't see him. Yeah, and that's after everybody's. That's after everybody's dead, and the only people are left are Anton and the skin bird. I don't remember her name.
Yeah, I don't remember her character's name. Basically, they're able to get weapons, including two firearms, away from people because
they get a shotgun and a probably 9mm or something.
Well, and all the smart people, all the people with any intellect left to go take care of the bodies. And they're like, hey, there's just two people down there. You can take care of them. Just bring us the bodies when you're done.
Yeah. Well, I think they were the younger kids, maybe in over their heads.
Yeah, most definitely. And they just get fucking killed so easily. They just get the jump on these guys.
Yeah.
There's in the green room, there's like this sub level underneath the green room where they're like running drugs and like laundering money and shit. And so one of them hides down there and they basically like trick them several times. The skin bird ends up dangling a dead body down there.
Her friend's legs, and he shoots.
He wastes some of his rounds shooting the dead woman's legs, thinking it's the living one. So, but they manage to get out, get away, and they take the guy who's was kind of like the first guy that they talked to. Who was just like the guy who was like, I just don't want to get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And they take him hostage.
He warns them what they're doing, like with the van and shit.
Right. He tells them everything.
He's like, you don't want to know or you don't want to see it or something like that. And they're like, yeah, like we need to or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he tells them where to go and he walks off on his own to try and find people.
Yeah. And it's really clear that he is just way in over his head.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, I mean, they send the entire audience away, the audience who are their people, because they know that most people will not cross that line.
Well, yeah. And I don't know that everybody there was necessarily a Nazi, you know?
Yeah.
They're
at least sympathetic.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was one guy there with the mohawk dancing around too. So that doesn't really mean shit because Waddy from fucking The Exploited hangs out with fucking Nazis. So and he's got a stupid mohawk as well. So
doesn't mean shit anymore. No, actually, never did.
And the guy who killed the chick. Mm-hmm. That caused this whole thing. He was like telling the band he liked their set.
The guy from Cowcatcher.
He really liked their second to last song or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He was like, that shit was brutal, man.
Yeah, that's what I did her to. That's what he said.
Yeah.
So he killed that girl to that their second to last song or whatever.
And I guess did I understand correctly? They killed her just because she was going to leave with the guy from Scott Pilgrim, who was also a Nazi?
I believe so.
Okay. I do remember when they got here, like they were talking to Scott Pilgrim guy. And he said something that didn't make sense at first. Cause remember the Mohawk guy from Astoria was like,
yeah,
it's my cousin. Him and his girlfriend are going to come stay with me. So I need to clean up. Yeah. And then when he gets there, he said, don't fucking mention that we're leaving, that we're going to stay. Don't fucking say anything.
Right.
And I was like, what an odd thing to say. And then it made sense by the end. One of the trivia notes for this movie is after Patrick Stewart read the script, he was in his country home in England when he read it. And he found the script so terrifying that he activated his security system and locked all the doors in the house.
Oh, shit.
Shit.
Damn.
And I settle down on a Saturday evening, read the script. I found it to be a page turner. and it scared the shit out of me. I was alone in my house. At some point in the story, I poured a large scotch to Gus. It was so unsettling. That sense of being in a situation surrounded by people you can't reason with. If it does this to me, then you know, when it's on screen, this might really have a lot of impact.
I mean, it's pretty fucking terrifying. And like, there's some brutal fucking scenes that like, it's hard for me to watch like some shit of people getting hurt. Like when like the dog attacks were really pretty fucking gnarly.
That was that was tough.
And Anton's character almost getting his hand chopped off.
Yeah, that was fucked up.
That was so.
Yeah, so there's a scene where they have gotten a hold of a gun at the near the beginning of the standoff, and Patrick Stewart's like, "Look, I'm not going to negotiate with you if you have a gun. Just not going to happen. So you need to throw the gun out here." And so they come to a compromise, like, "Okay, we'll keep the rounds, but we'll throw the gun out." And they open the door, and Anton Yelchin sticks his whole arm out there. I just would have thrown it.
Yeah, I just tossed it. Well,
throw it.
Patrick Stewart's character was like, "It's an antique. It's very important to me."
They're like, "Fuck your antique."
Yeah. Well, so what I mean, there was that little air vent that the blonde chick was looking through.
"Okay, stand back."
"You got it."
"Here we go."
Approach?
"No. No, I'm going to throw it."
"Careful. It was a gift."
"You're killing us.
Keep the gun."
"No, the door. No. No. Open the door." "Fuck off. Hold it.
No. Okay, okay. No. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Help me move it.
This will be over soon, gentlemen."
Yeah.
I would have dropped the gun there.
Right. Just throw it right through the vent.
My arm out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you wouldn't have the scene where he almost gets his hand chopped off. Yeah. It was so fucking gnarly.
It was. His hand was like about to fall off. And then they tape it back on with duct tape.
Yeah, yeah. And then the handler's death. I mean, so the shit with the handler, Big Jim, I think was his name or something like
that. Yeah,
that
sounds right.
Mm-hmm. First they break his arm, which was gnarly. And then they choke him out, which is, I mean, whatever. But then the blonde skin bird, like, cuts him open from like belt to sternum, just like slices his belly right the fuck open.
Yeah. The box cutter that they found.
Yeah. Yeah. So gnarly.
Yeah.
Those are the two like gnarliest scenes.
Yeah.
And then the dogs.
Yeah. Which I always have such mixed feelings about dog deaths like that. So the dog that killed the drummer, they end up putting that dog to sleep because the dog is now evidence. So they have to dispose of the dog now too. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not gonna lie. I fucking hate it when dogs die in movies. Mm-hmm. I have a dog. I have a pit bull even.
Mm-hmm.
My pit bull's fucking super sweet. Just a big old dopey sweetheart.
Yeah.
And pit bulls usually are, unless they're trained to be otherwise. Right. You could even see those dogs when they weren't being told to attack were pretty kind of like dopey sweethearts.
Like at the end when that one that got away came back, I was so scared. I was like, oh fuck. Like, right. it's going to attack.
There's no one telling it to attack, so it just didn't give a shit.
It laid down next to its owner and looked bummed out.
Its owner's dead body.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Which was, I mean, he was a Nazi, so fuck that guy. But you still feel bad for the dog. The dogs don't know any better. They don't know that they're owned by Nazis.
I mean, that's fucking
animal
abuse. They don't
know what the fucking Nazi is. Like, and once again, I take offense to the fact that Nazis, for whatever fucking reason, just love pit bulls.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate that because I love pit bulls. And pit bulls are famously a mixed dog because there is no such breed as pit bull. Pit bull isn't a breed. It's a kind of amorphous area that a lot of mixed mutt dogs fall into that have similar features. But they're very famously not pure. So it doesn't make sense to use them as a symbol. It just, I mean, well, I don't expect Nazis to actually know
you can't make
shit,
sense out of fucking Nazis. Nah,
fucking stupid. So, but it's one of the most famously mixed types of dogs. So it just doesn't make sense for it to be like a part of any kind of like racial purity.
Yeah.
So dog breeds are just made up anyway, but so are races. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Here we go.
Social constructs.
But yeah, I did. I felt bad for the dogs, you know, that one dog who had to get put to sleep because he was now evidence. And then, that other dog who just laid on his dead owner, in the same way that my dog lays on me, you know, at the end they catch up to the people who are trying to like blow their van up and their now deceased bandmates in it. And they kill the dog trainer. They kill that other guy. And then at the end they kill Patrick Stewart's character, who just tries to like walk away from them and pulls out a gun as he's walking away.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just going to try to walk away. And then I think that his character thinks that they don't have what it takes to shoot him, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then they shoot that other guy.
After all they'd been through. Yeah.
Right.
The last headshot of Patrick Stewart and that spurt of blood that comes out was a really nice touch.
It was. Yeah.
Quality.
And he tried to get a shot off while he was getting shot, and he just ended up shooting the side of the van. So it didn't actually go anywhere.
Right.
I don't remember what the line is now. I got to look it up. So apparently the first line spoken in the movie is the exact same line as the last line spoken in the movie.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. When Anton Yelchin says, my island, desert island band would be.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And she says, who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
That was apparently the first line in the movie, too.
I know what it is.
What is?
A desert island band.
Tell somebody who gives a shit.
The skinhead chick to Anton Yelchin's character when he says, I finally thought of my desert island band. She says, who gives a shit? And then it goes right into the credits. Same line, and it goes right into Creedence Clearwater Revival. Mm-hmm. So you're led to believe that that was the band he was going to say.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. And
interesting.
So, yeah. I found it really accurate that a bunch of punk rockers would pick bands that aren't punk, except that one poser who picked the Misfits and the Damned.
Right.
That's the most poser shit of all, is to pick actual punk bands.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
I don't even know if I'd call the Damned a punk band. They're kind of punk adjacent. I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't, I mean, and the Misfits, come on.
Yeah. The Misfits.
I mean, they're fun, but
yeah.
Desert Island. They're more band, like, come on. Yeah.
The Misfits are more just like goth rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, like I said, they're fun, but it's more like party music than it is anything else. Like, you put it on for fun.
Yeah.
And only like a couple songs, not like a whole record.
Right.
That's a whole lot of Misfits and Danzig.
I have a couple of Misfits songs in my playlists, but I don't think I could listen to more than, honestly, I don't think I could listen to two in a row. Like one.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm good for a few more hours.
Right.
till the next one comes on. I'm good.
There's only so many day. There's only so many woes I can take, you know.
I know.
And one song pushes the limit.
Yeah.
Of woes that I can take in a day.
Yeah. So there is one thing I do like too is I did like the costume design. Because
yeah, the wardrobe was really good.
Like, they weren't dressed like they were like punk cartoons.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
They were dressed like they were people who were like just driving in a van on the road and playing shows.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and like the kid that interviews them that sets this whole thing off with the Mohawk, he's seen as kind of like a doofus. Like he's portrayed as like he's not really taken seriously. Like he's interviewing them and they're not enjoying the interview. He fucks them over on the gig. He sends them some Nazi fucking club, you know, like he is not a serious person.
Right. Also he's,
and he's the one with the Mohawk and the most
punk
rock looking one.
He's also recording them for an interview with just a single digital recorder put in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And then when they're like, is this going to be in print? And he said, yeah, it's going to be on college radio too. I thought your audio quality is going to be shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that bothered
dude was a clown.
Right. Like it bothered me because I was like, no, even a college radio station would listen to that audio and go, we can't fucking use this.
Yeah.
What are you sending us this? We can't use this. Like it would sound like absolute shit, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely thought the costuming wardrobe was very realistic. Seemed pretty accurate to me for the groups of people.
Yeah, there. For sure. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I think Anton Yelchin's character was just wearing just like a regular like Fugazi shirt, if I remember right.
Something like that, yeah.
No, Minor Threat is Minor Threat.
Mm.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Same band.
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe Fionn K was wearing a Dead Kennedy shirt.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the other two characters were wearing. Man. Just like some t-shirts.
Just dirty t-shirts.
Right, but none of them had like mohawks or anything like that. Like,
I think one of them have green hair, maybe.
I guess Anton Yelchin shaves his head right at the end when he's in that.
Mm-hmm.
When he goes, kind of goes crazy. He also screams. What does he scream? Something when they come and he screams something like, "I'm filled with the wrath of Odin" or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, yeah.
I'm wondering if he's like making fun of them for being boneheads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Either that or he's just lost his mind.
That was his kill them all and let a Norse god sort him out moment.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Also, as somebody who is almost entirely Northwest European, probably and completely entirely, mostly Scottish and Norwegian, I am offended by white supremacists using old symbols of cultures from that area that had no concept of fucking race or national borders or anything like that. Can you imagine telling somebody from Scandinavia in like the 9th century, trying to explain the concept of races to them?
Yeah.
They'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You'd be like, no, man, because like you're European and we're one European brotherhood. And they'd be like, what's Europe? And they'd be like, you know, from Greece to here. And they'd be like, Greece? Like, Greece is just as foreign to them as Japan. Like, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? What is this race thing that it sounds like it was made up way after my death? Anyway, that's just my pet peeve. Fuck those Nazi fucks. They get nothing.
Yeah,
they get
nothing. Sure.
Positives? Fucking set design and costume, fucking everything looked great. The venue looked exactly. I mean, I've never been to a Nazi venue, but
the distinction between what I imagine a Nazi venue is and what a punk rock venue is the accoutrement of the establishment,
right?
That is like they're all going to be dirty and gross. One of them is going to be filled with Nazi bullshit, and one is not.
Yeah, right. And white nationalist venues. I imagine they look just like punk venues, but with Nazi iconography instead of like anarchist and like band and stuff iconography and stuff like that. So that's definitely a big one. Was I thought the movie looked great. It seemed way more authentic to what my experiences in punk were, just with the Ain't Rights specifically, than something like SLC Punk did, which, SLC Punk was just like the Disneyland of punk movies, where it's just like, it's not real, and we know it's not real. Mm-hmm. Like, it's too cartoony. This was kind of more, this was very set.
Grounded in reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. Of course, the performances were phenomenal. Nobody gave a bad performance. Even the people who just had like one line, which, the guy who said he didn't want to go to jail and he ended up living, he was actually the producer of the film.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He actually directs and produces a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. So he's primarily a director and producer. I'll have to look his name up again. He's done other stuff that we've heard of. Yeah, those are my positives. Thought it looked great. Thought it felt real. Thought the acting was great. For my negatives,
Hang on. Let's each do our positives and then each do our negatives. So I'll do my positive next.
All right.
All right. So my positives are, it looked great. Like it was a well-crafted film from cinematography, sound design, set design, costume design, all of it. It looked real. It looked lived in. It was an organic looking film. You know, it looked real. It was very, again, like you, my experiences of underground music scenes, it was very familiar. Nazi bullshit aside, I really liked the creativity that the band used to get out of situations and the resourcefulness of them. There was a lot of fire extinguisher usage to attack the Nazis and cause distractions to get out of tricky situations. I thought that was a really creative use of what was around. It was very resourcefulness and to, you know, in the writer's room thinking of that, you know, that's really interesting. That's great.
Well, they make reference to multiple times before the standoff happens that the owner is hyper aware of the fire code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there are fire extinguishers all over the place too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they stick with that. And that was, I agree. That was really creative. That was really well done.
And just trying to give other positives from what you did, because obviously I agree with everything you said about acting and everything. But my last one would be what they were able to accomplish on such a small budget. You know, $5 million sounds like a lot of money, but that's not shit when you make a fucking movie.
Right.
You know, and I mean, as you said, they didn't make that back in theaters. So, you know, but they made a fantastic looking movie on a limited budget. You know, I would not be surprised if you said it had a $20 million budget, $30 million budget. You know, I would believe it, just because it looked so good and it was such a well-made film.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to add to my positives list is the pacing. I thought was perfect.
Oh, yeah. It was always moving. There was no there was no gratuitous downtime. There was time for the characters and the viewer to breathe, to catch their breath.
Right.
You know, it was, so yeah, it was paced really well. You don't want it to just be nonstop. That's stressful and
right.
Anxiety yeah. inducing, but there was enough breath in between all the chaos to, ground it and not, be too chaotic.
Right. Yeah. They did a great job with the character development too, with even with, yeah, like such a fast paced movie, they did allow a little bit of that breathing room so that they could develop those characters. Mm-hmm. I do like, there was multiple scenes where a character was telling a story and they didn't get to finish the story because they're like, hey, we got to fucking move. We got to do this. Like, uh-huh. And then they would finish it later.
Yeah, yeah.
So it did feel pretty grounded in reality of like the action didn't stop and start at the convenience of whatever speech somebody was giving. Right, which is one of my pet peeves in movies is when it's timed exactly perfectly with the big grand speech somebody's going to give.
Right.
Just doesn't feel very realistic. Mm-hmm. So this did that really well. It felt real. I got to give some negatives though. I would have liked to have had a more robust soundtrack. I don't know how they would have made that happen, but. But you know, the Ain't Rights had one song that we heard, and then they did a cover of Dead Kennedys' "Nazi Punks Fuck Off," and we didn't really hear any other punk music in the movie that I can recall.
No, I mean during the rest of the movie, they had some weird death metal on repeat, I guess, going through the PA.
Right.
You know, and during the dog attacks, this is another, just getting back to like how resourceful they were. They caused feedback, to get the dogs to go away. You know, another really smart, use of surroundings. And again, in the writer's room thinking of that shit, that's, you know, impressive.
It is.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my negatives too. Is there's no real soundtrack, and you know that probably has to do with the limited budget that they have, because getting rights to songs can be really expensive. You know, I would guess there are ways around that by using more underground stuff. But you know, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might still be difficult to get the rights back because.
They got the rights to Nazi Punks Fuck Off, and that probably blew their music budget.
Well, I don't know if they need to get it if somebody's doing a cover of it. I could be wrong.
That's true. They were actually playing the instruments. All of them were actually playing. That was an actual live performance that they filmed.
So I don't know how that works. I'm sure there's some sort of fucking copyright issue with that, but I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Also, I hope that they wouldn't be, I don't know who specifically owns the rights to that song. I would imagine
it's the Dead Kennedys, not Jello Biafra. No, he doesn't own the catalog to the Dead Kennedys. He lost that in a court battle in the 80s.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I would hope that they wouldn't be about having their song Nazi Punks Fuck Off in a movie telling Nazis to fuck off.
Yeah.
That would be weird. Yeah. It's kind of the purpose of the song is to make sure that Nazis know that they should fuck off.
Right. Maybe they were doing the Napalm Death cover.
Maybe. Which, have you heard the Napalm Death cover?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. It's really good.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
I like it better than the original.
Do you? Okay. I don't know if I'd go that far. It's really good though. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's my biggest negative is I would have liked to have seen a more robust soundtrack. How would that happen? I don't know. I don't have an explanation for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know I'm just sitting here being an armchair director, but and I don't really know what I'm doing. But yeah, I think that that's really my only big critique of the movie. That, and they should have just, when they saw they were Nazis, they should have just turned around, but then the movie wouldn't have happened.
So my recollection of the movie from when I watched it a long time ago, whenever it was. I remember, I misremembered like a scene with Patrick Stewart in the room with them, like sitting down having a conversation with them. That never happened. It wasn't in the movie.
Could have been a cut scene, or you might have just
They
imagined it.
no, I think I just misremembered.
Yeah.
He doesn't really face-to-face interact with them until the very end.
Right.
I would have liked to see more Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. I would imagine that he
Yeah, if he
flew out
only had
from
a
the
day of
UK
filming, yeah, for
and
sure.
just he was like, "Hey, you've got me for this many days." And they're like, "All right, let's just get all these scenes with Patrick Stewart knocked out." Like
Yeah, no, for sure, but
yeah. It's kind of what it sounded like too when the director apologized because he felt he was screwing up. And Patrick Stewart was apparently very, very cordial and was just like, "Yeah, don't worry about it."
Really, and you know, as you said, music. I wish there was more music in the film. You know, for a movie about a touring punk rock band, there's not much music in the film. So I would, yeah, I wish there was more music in it. But other than that, you know, it is way better than I remember the first time, and I think that I was just hung up on them playing at a Nazi venue.
Something else too is they say during their interview with Mohawk Guy that because he goes, "Hey, you guys are really hard to find. I can't find you on social media. I can't find you anywhere." And they give this whole speech about how, they just want to connect with the crowd and they don't want to be tied to social media. But that doesn't ever really go anywhere. Like that, I get that it's that they're kind of trying to like build a vibe of the band, but at the same time, like that doesn't ever come. I thought they were going to work that in. Of like the Nazis were going to be like, "Well, let's take a look at what kind of social media presence they have, or is anyone going to miss these people?" And be like, "They don't have any fucking social media presence." I thought that was going to like come back in. Maybe it isn't a cut scene.
Sort of like a Chekhov's rifle.
Right, a Yelchin's gun, a Pavel's gun. Like that just didn't ever come back into play, and maybe it isn't a cut scene somewhere. Maybe it's just got cut, and then they just didn't cut the first part because that messed up the flow of the first part, so they just left it in. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen that go somewhere, or just cut out that line entirely if it's not going to go anywhere. Because I didn't feel that really added anything, like. They could have just as easily said, like, "We don't see you have much of a social, we see you don't have much of a social media presence because you guys were hard to get a hold of." And they could just be like, "Well, we're on the road, so, and they could have just been left at that if they wanted to do it at all. Like, and that would have been, there's plenty of people who tour or are living on the road who don't get on social media a lot. That's pretty believable,
Well, and 10 years
especially in
ago, it wasn't quite
2015.
as prevalent as it is now, you know.
Yeah. How would you make it better?
More music, more Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, agree. Same. I would have had way more Patrick Stewart. I would have had more interactions between the band and Patrick Stewart in the same room. And
You
way
know,
more, way more music.
yeah, a bigger budget so they could afford some music rights.
Right,
And,
right.
you know, it was a tight hour and 34 minute movie.
It was, yeah.
So I don't know that it needs to be longer. And like you
Right.
said, the pacing was really good. So I don't really know like
Right.
what service that would do to have more interaction with Patrick Stewart and them. But you know, just as a fan,
Right, yeah.
it would be nice to see him more
And
because he's a delight.
as a fan too, I would have liked to. I know it sounds cheesy, but it can be like a one-off line, something just referencing either Star Trek or X-Men. Just to establish that they do exist in this universe, and nobody has said anything about
Like,
the fact that he looks just like Captain Picard and Professor
no,
X.
I got it. Like one of the skinheads should have been called Wesley, And you should have told him to shut up.
Wesley.
Shut up, Wesley.
Yeah, that could have been good.
Should have happened. That would have been a good Easter egg. Yeah, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. that's just my own cheesy fantasy, though.
Yeah. No, I'm here for it. I agree.
So I guess it's time to get on to our rating of this movie.
Oh, fuck.
So we have two rating systems that we apply to every movie. The first one is how punk is the movie? And that is, there's only three categories. There's poser, punk I'm a fucking rocker, and upper crust. So poser obviously means the movie's not punk at all. Mm-hmm. Punk I'm a fucking rocker means the movie is punk, but it could have been more punk. And upper crust is the most punk a movie can be. I already know what score I'm going to give it for that one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's upper crust.
You think it's upper crust?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say punk I'm a rocker.
Because they played a Nazi club?
They played a Nazi club, and then they didn't have enough actual punk music in the movie.
Yeah. Fair.
But it was close. It was fucking real close.
I mean, the how rooted it was in reality and similar to like our experiences, not with Nazis, but just with the scene at large.
Shitty piss smelling clubs.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
It was realistic as fuck. It was. So that's why I'm saying upper crust.
That, and I'm just mad that I did that. Now it's going to be hard for me to watch old Star Trek and not think of Patrick Stewart being a scary Nazi. So
yeah.
So just for that, I'm going to knock it down a peg to punk my fucking rocker.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then our second scale is how good was the movie? Which is a completely different scale, because a movie that's not punk at all can still be good, and a movie that's super punk can still be shitty. So what are we going to use? And for every single movie, we use a different metric of how good it is based on something specific from the movie. What are we going to use for this one?
I think it should be anti-swastika tattoos.
Anti-swastika tattoos. Mm-hmm. How many is the most?
You decide that.
Oof. I either have to make it a whole lot or very few. It can't be in between. It's got to feel ridiculous. How about 500 anti-swastika tattoos?
Okay.
that's a lot. that's how many people with anti-swastika tattoos I would want to have my back if I accidentally wandered into a Nazi club. Yeah. So... 500, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I like those odds.
Good number. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say 475 anti-swastika tattoos.
Damn, that's pretty fucking good. You know what? I got to one-up you. I'm going to go with 490 anti-swastika tattoos.
That's almost perfect.
Damn near.
That's a 4.9 stars.
It is.
If we were going by those metrics, but we're not.
We're not.
We're going by... anti-swastika tattoos.
We are.
Out of 500.
490 anti-swastika tattoos out of 500.
That is pretty respectable. That is a respectable amount of anti-swastika tattoos.
I'm not going to lie. I like this movie a lot more than I thought I would. I thought that I would think it was maybe okay, and I would be upset and disturbed by it. I was upset and disturbed by it, but it was actually really fucking good too. So
yeah, way better than I remembered it. Yeah. And it sure was an A24 ass movie.
Fuck yeah, it was.
Which is not a bad thing.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, A24 definitely, they like to make some pretty pretentious movies. And this is one of them. But yeah, really good. I might watch other stuff from this director. The guy who didn't want to go to jail, who they let leave because he wasn't
the cousin.
No, the cousin got killed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He got shot in the face.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. No, the guy who they were like, he told them about the van and everything.
Yeah.
And they let him go, and he went and like found a farm and was like, I need to call the police.
Yeah, I need the police.
So that guy is also a film director. He directed a movie called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. I don't know if you saw that. It was on Netflix that a while ago.
Sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. It had Frodo Baggins, Elijah Wood. That's his name.
I Elijah Wood is a fucking delight.
He is. He's.
I love him so much.
Incredible in everything I've ever seen him in. Yeah. Even stuff he's in that's not very good, he's still good. So
have you seen his episode of Yo Gabba Gabba, the Dancy Dance?
No, I have not. I'm going to look it up, though.
You should watch it. It's so good. It's called The Puppet Master.
But yeah, it has Elijah Wood and Melanie Linsky.
I like her too.
Yep. So yeah,
she's married to what's his name?
Jason Ritter, John Ritter's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another Nepo baby that does a great job.
He does. I like him. Yeah. I like him a lot. Like John Ritter too. R.I.P.
Yeah.
And of course, I have not seen it yet. He directed the reboot of Toxic Avenger, which I don't know if I'm gonna watch that. I'll try. It's got Peter Dinklage in it.
Hey, that's. I just like why.
I don't think we needed one. I don't think we needed a reboot. And you know how I feel about reboots. Which is one of the reasons why I think The Green Room did so poorly in theaters is because it's brand new IP.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a reboot, a deboot, a sequel, a reimagining, a spiritual sequel. It's none of that shit. It's just a fucking movie. And people aren't interested in... I know I'm going to sound like a boomer when I say this, but I don't give a
I
shit.
Don't think
people aren't
I don't
interested
think it's, in movies I don't think
anymore.
It's people that aren't interested in it. I think that Hollywood is scared to make original IPs.
Fuck
and
yeah, they
when
are.
They, when they do that, they don't promote them well enough.
That's why I said I don't remember even seeing Green Room promoted.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't remember it. But that's why I suspect... that Green Room did not do well. It's because it's new IP and people just, or you know, studios just aren't promoting it.
Yeah.
And I hate to say, and we all fall into this category. We end up seeing what we're kind of spoon fed. Like, I didn't see Green Room. I did see Fantastic Four. It was presented to me millions of times, so I went to go see it.
I still haven't seen it.
We all fall for that shit. I enjoyed it. I'm not saying that it's bad. It was an enjoyable movie. Superman was an enjoyable movie. But they are both reboots of franchises that have been rebooted many times. And then we have reboots of Star Trek, reboots of Star Wars. I'm sick of reboots, deboots, reimaginings, all that shit. That's one of the reasons I never got into the Abrams Trek and the Abrams Star Wars. Like, I'm just like the fact that
people need to stop giving that fucking hack shit to do.
Shit to do. Like,
same with fucking M. Night Shyamalan. Stop giving that motherfucker shit to do.
At least M. Night Shyamalan movies, though, at least they are new IP. At least he's not doing like reboots, deboots. I mean, they're bad ideas, but at least they're his. I'll give him that.
Well,
I can't give that to J.J.
Abrams. He fucked up one of my favorite books. So,
which one?
Cabin in the Wood, or Cabin at the End of the World?
Oh, never.
M. Night Shyamalan made a movie of it called Knock at the Cabin Door.
Never saw it.
The book is incredible. It's by Paul Tremblay, who is one of my favorite horror authors.
Nice.
And the book was fucking riveting. Like, I read it in like a day. I could not put it down. It was so fucking good. And I heard that he was gonna make an adaptation of it. And it has Dave Bautista as one of the main characters.
Oh, I remember seeing that advertised. I never saw that.
And I was really excited about it, but also pretty... had low expectations because it was M. Night Shyamalan doing it, and he took all the teeth out of it. The shit in the movie that happens that hits the hardest, he took away. fucking lame.
Yeah, that sucks.
It's a very interesting spin on home invasion horror, which is one of my least favorite genres of horror, but it was done in such a way that subverts your expectations of what it is.
I will always have a place in my heart for M. Night Shyamalan because he made one of the funniest movies of all time, The Happening, which is, I think, just one of the most unintentionally hilarious movies I have ever seen. Watching Mark Wahlberg try to act in that is delightful.
I like that movie.
He plays a math teacher. They were like, we need someone to play a math teacher. Who should we get? And they said, Mark Wahlberg.
Marky Mark.
Mark fucking Wahlberg. Okay. Who should play his ex-wife? Zooey Deschanel. Like, it's two names I would never put together for any fucking project. And it's like they just had a bunch of names in a hat and were just pulling them out and been like, all right, Marky Mark and Zooey Deschanel. Why the fuck not? What's the plot? The trees are killing people with air. Sorry, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen that movie. Because they're mad at us. Mm-hmm. For
as they should be.
They should be.
I hear you whispering. Planning on stealing something?
No, ma'am, we're not.
Plan on murdering me in my sleep?
What? No!
Most unintentionally hilarious movie I've ever seen. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
I like Watch that movie. I know it got a lot of hate, but I had a good time watching it.
Struggle to play a math teacher.
I also liked The Village. A lot of people don't like The Village. I thought that was fun.
It wasn't his worst one.
Lady in the Water is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
The elevator movie, Devil, I think.
Didn't see that one.
And they're in the elevator the whole time. You know, he loves to do a twist.
He does. Yeah.
The twist was so fucking obvious that, like, he got me. I was like, nah, it's not, that's too obvious. It's not going to be that. And it was.
Isn't the twist just that it's the old lady's the devil?
Yeah.
And they're already dead or something like that?
I don't know about that. I don't think so. But maybe they are. I don't know.
I did like Unbreakable, I think, is the only movie of his I actually really liked.
Yeah, Unbreakable was really good. I mean, I liked Signs. I mean, it's dumb as fuck that aliens are allergic to water and come to a planet that's
mostly
covered
water.
In 70% water, but
to fight people who are also mostly water.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. And why are they naked?
I don't know.
And just like in rural Pennsylvania, just like jumping from rooftop to rooftop, it would have made more sense if they'd been like, oh, they, you know, got knocked off course and crash landed here accidentally in rural Pennsylvania or something like that. Why would they come here on purpose? It just doesn't make any fucking sense. And to what end? Mm-hmm. Are they trying to get our resources? Not water.
Not our water, right?
Are they trying to take over the world? To what end? Why? For what purpose? Yeah. Sixth Sense was overrated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I saw Jacob's Ladder already, and it's way better.
Mm-hmm. Jacob, I have heard they're remaking that also.
Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah,
they already remade it. They remade it like 5 years ago.
For real?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Yeah. I don't know why they would do that. I think
it's really bad.
I don't know what I saw the other day. Then maybe it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
What the
maybe fuck? They're remaking it again. I don't know.
I hope not.
Nobody can come up with new ideas.
They're making another Evil Dead movie. I think Evil Dead 4.
Yeah. Yet nobody is bold enough to give us money to make Triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking cowards.
You know what I want to see a sequel to? Meet the Feebles. The Muppets came back, you know. Uh-huh. Let somebody make a new Meet the Feebles movie.
Meet the Feebles. All right. And whenever I do finish 50 Shades of Grey, make that movie, you fucking cowards.
Right.
Give me some money to make it.
Yeah.
I'll even call it a spiritual sequel of Twilight. Since 50 Shades of Grey is just fan fiction Twilight anyway. Mm-hmm. I'll skip past 50 Shades of Grey and be like, no, this is a spiritual sequel of Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
And people will be like, why and how? I'll be like, because there's fucking in it. There's fucking in Twilight. There you go. But in my book, in my movie, nobody falls in love with a baby. So that's what makes mine better.
Fucking weird.
We're way off topic, but for anybody
Mormons, right? Right? She's Mormon?
Yeah, the person who wrote Twilight. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Stephanie Meyer, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
In
the third movie,
they love child brides, so why not just take it a step further and have a baby bride?
So in the last movie, which I think is the third or maybe it's the fourth, I don't know, it's the last one, I think. The main chick has a vampire and a werewolf who are both in love with her, and she has to pick one. Because I guess they haven't heard of threesomes yet in Mormonism. So she's got to pick one of them. And she picks the vampire and they get pregnant. And the werewolf guy's like, oh, I guess I'll just fall in love with your unborn baby then. And he imprints, which is something that Stephanie Meyer made up, where it just sounds like grooming to me. She calls it imprinting. Listen.
Regarding threesomes, they're called sister wives, not husband brothers.
They could be. Why not have a couple of brother husbands? Why not?
No.
Come on, you fucking prudes.
That is in direct opposition to the patriarchy.
Damn it. All right. Fine. No brother husbands for you then. My wife's going to listen to this episode and she's going to get ideas now.
She could deal with another man. We're annoying enough the way it is.
It sounds good on paper, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. Our wives can barely deal with one of us. Why the fuck would they want to deal with two or more?
I'm just thinking of three adult incomes.
I mean,
see? In this economy.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this economy.
So do we have anything else to say about Green Room? Well, we should probably circle back to the movie that we're actually doing the review of.
No, I think we're done.
For our next movie, we're going to do our first musical. We're doing a movie called Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is a 2001 musical comedy drama. It was written and directed by John Cameron Mitchell, who also stars as Hedwig. I honestly don't remember a whole lot about the movie. My wife is an expert and she actually will be one of our guest hosts. And, so it's about initially gay, then later transgender woman who comes over from Germany to live with an army sergeant who she met in Germany. And she comes to the town of Junction City, Kansas, which is our Kansas connection. So it seems like an appropriate movie to do because we are Kansas punks and it is a punk musical set at least somewhat in Kansas. So it seems crazy to not do it. So look up some stuff about that. I'm going to play the trailer at the end of this episode so you can watch the trailer and I will be much more informed on that movie by the time we actually record the episode. So, and to my wife, I'm so sorry. I don't remember more. What's that, in about a month?
Yeah,
about a month. Yeah. So we are going to start trying to do these every month. We had a rough summer, so we didn't get a lot of these done. We both have had problems
with time.
Time, especially because of our full-time jobs, which if you donate, if you go to www.prairiepunkpress.com and go to our donate page, you can donate to our coffee page, which is KOFI, which is like a tip jar, or you can become a patron on Patreon and give us money that way.
Just like Mr. Power and Alec and Adam and Chris and Johnny do.
Thanks, everybody.
Be like them.
You keep the lights on in our non-studio. If you give enough money, we could actually get a real studio. Maybe. So check out our stuff. Check out our other podcast, A Prairie Punk House Companion. Those episodes come out every other week. You can also find that on this same YouTube channel and also find that on our RSS feed. You can just Google A Prairie Punk House Companion, and we are the only thing that comes up on RSS.
Not to be confused with Patriot Punk Podcast.
That's true.
Fuck those posers.
We are not
Patriot Punk Podcast. I should probably save this for Prairie Punk House Companion, but I just want to riddle me this, conservative punks. How is beating families, separating families, and showing up at children's schools to disappear mothers and fathers punk rock? How is that punk rock? Can you explain that to me? Because it doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
I have an answer. The answer is it is not punk rock. And any punks who support it are not punks. They're posers who like to cosplay as punks because they like the aesthetic, but they also like cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not punk at all.
Not punk. Nope. Cool. Cool journey to Hot Topic you had, though, to get the aesthetic down. Yeah. Do they still sell that shit at Hot Topic? Is that even still around?
Yeah, I mean, Hot Topic is still around. My kids like to go there. It's more anime, goth, and emo centric. Okay. I don't see a lot of punk rock stuff there.
Okay.
No more crash shirts at the mall that I have seen.
Nobody liked the mall more than Crass.
There's one thing I know about Crass. It's that they love the mall.
It's true. Most punk bands love consumerism. Do we have anything else before we go?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, everybody.
Hey, thanks for watching or listening.
Yeah, thanks. Go watch Green Room if you haven't seen it. I highly recommend it. I thought it was really good.
Super good.
Yeah. And pour one out for Anton Yelchin.
All right.
If you have one to spare. And if you don't drink alcohol, pour out a soda or something. I don't know. Figure something out. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not.
Ow!
Hedvig!
Don't you know me, Kansas City? I'm the new Berlin Wall. Try and tear me down.
How did some slip of a girly boy become the internationally ignored song stylist barely standing before you?
Damn, handsome. I can't believe you're not a girl.
Looks like we got some sugar daddies in the house. You could give me a cavity, honey.
Now you're interested, huh?
Inch, yeah. Not itch.
Intrigued. It is clear that I must find my other half. But is it a he or a she? Can two people actually become one?
The dark turns and noise of this wicked little town.
One day, in the late mid-80s, I was in my early late 20s.
I never knew that woman before that night, and I never knew she wasn't a woman.
I've got a sweet tooth. Songs exploded out of us. We were outgrossing monster trucks in Wichita.
When it comes to huge openings, a lot of people think of me.
I had tried singing once, and they threw tomatoes. So after the show, I had a nice salad. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, both of you.
Did you put a bra in a dryer? How many times do I have to tell? You don't put a bra in a dryer! It warps!
Okay, everybody.
I put on some makeup.
Suddenly I'm this punk rock star. I'll never turn it back.
Hey boy, take a walk on the wild side.
side.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
When I think about all the people I have come upon in my travels, I have to think about the people who have come upon me.
That's wrong.